Hi, you're listening to The Wing Woman, brought to you by journalists and best mates, Charlie Gowans Eglinton, that's me, and Frankie Craddon, that's her. Hi, thanks, how are you?
Hello, I'm well, thanks, how are you? How's Norfolk?
It's lovely, thanks. We've just had to move our studio downstairs. I say we, I mean just me, because my internet connection didn't reach upstairs.
It's the perils of going rural.
So thanks for bearing with me, Franks.
No worries.
You now find me in a very beachside-themed living room.
I love that about going away when you go coastal. The interior decoration, or wherever you tend to stay, is very nautical.
Very nautical.
But then don't you find that then you start thinking, would this rope ball doorstop or beach hut shower curtain work at home? Because I bloody love it. And then you do bring it home and you think, no, no, that only works when you can see the sea from outside your house. Not in London.
You are right. It's lovely. It's not hot as beach holidays go, but I've still managed to have two big swims in the sea.
Gorgeous. Did you feel free?
I felt very free. Quite cold. I was wearing a itsy bitsy yellow Hunza G bikini both times as well.
Were you? She?
Yeah. I do have a long sleeve zippy uppy sort of wetsuit top thing. No.
No.
I decided against it. This is my beach holiday.
Yeah.
First one this year, so I'm getting my bikini. Glorious. I've eaten a lot of delicious things. I've drunk a lot of wine. Sorry if I'm a bit hoarse this morning. This cup of tea is not really hitting me yet. But how are you, Francesca Craddon?
I'm fine. I've booked a staycation. 7 days in Pembrokeshire.
Lovely.
Why not?
What's in Pembrokeshire? Deer?
Apparently, it has arguably the most beautiful coastline in the UK. And if we consider the Roslyn Peninsula in Cornwall, the Jurassic Coast in Dorset, if this is in fact the most beautiful coastline in the UK, then my, am I in for a treat?
You are in for a treat.
Yeah, but I am meeting this staycation with the enthusiasm that I would meet 2 weeks in Greece.
Yes, exactly.
I've just made that decision for myself. That I'm going to just get really, really excited about it, even though, I mean, we're going in September, so chances are high that it will rain. Although saying that, September's actually quite nice in the UK. So if anyone has any Pembrokeshire tips, if anyone lives in Wales and is listening to this and wants to send me some things to do, I think I would like some places to eat. I'm all ears, because as I say, it's uncharted territory.
I'm pretending that I'm also on a holiday in Greece and I've worn shorts every day.
Good.
So I'm here with my family. My sister has worn a puffer coat every single day and I, like, full jeans. Yesterday, we went for a walk, this nature reserve on the beach, and she was wearing full-length jeans, Wellington boots, and a puffer jacket over a knitwear and a top. And I was wearing a stripy cotton jumper with some white shorts and just walking barefoot on the beach.
Wow. Wow, you must have looked like a right pair.
I am living the weather I want.
There you go.
Not the weather that exists.
In Bray.
It's glorious.
I caught myself on the Matches website getting sucked into the sale.
Did you buy that Ganni dress?
Oh my God, I bought the Ganni dress.
It looks really nice.
Do you know what? It looks fucking amazing on me. Mm. And I don't say that lightly, because I often put things on and think, oh, boo-hoo. But I put this on and I thought, ding dong. It's a bit like a denim sack. So if anyone subscribes to the newsletter, I put it in the newsletter on Saturday and it's in the sale. It's still really expensive, but I've done that weird thing where I've sort of managed to convince myself that I need it. But in my head, I was thinking, a holiday dress.
Love that.
But I just stopped myself from buying some more swimwear because I thought, do you know what? When holidaying in the UK, it's slightly different rules when building a holiday wardrobe, because I probably don't need a flippy sundress, but I've got one anyway. But I definitely don't need a white bikini, especially not with my skin tone. My God, I would just look naked from a distance.
I think you should dress for the holiday you want, not the holiday you have. I actually love this holiday. I'm not saying I would swap it, because I love Norfolk. And if anybody could be in the area, Holcombe Beach is just the most beautiful. Pine forest gives way onto miles of white sand. in either direction, and there's sand dunes, and it's glorious. And also, I had Mr. Whippy.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what?
Yeah.
I have really rediscovered Mr. Whippy this summer.
Me too. It was you who reintroduced me.
I've been faffing around with artisanal gelato and sorbet in funky flavours, but nothing beats a Mr. Whippy. More expensive than what I remember, but more creamy than what I remember.
Well, you're really living the life of a one percenter because you get the waffle cone, don't you?
I know, it's £3.50 for a waffle cone.
Wowza.
Very far from the 99 days.
I mean, it's called a 99. A scandal, that's what it is. Do you get a flake?
Get a flake and sprinkles.
Sprinkles?
Yeah, fuck it. They're delicious. Whilst you've been in Norfolk, have you been able to tune into the cultural phenomenon that is Love Island?
I haven't watched it yet. I've seen a lot of Instagram reactions and Twitter reactions. Please talk me through it. Imagine I've just come out of a cave.
Yeah.
I've been hibernating or I've awoken from a coma.
Love Island is back and it is like the pandemic never happened. I don't know what I was expecting from Love Island because it isn't really a cultural barometer, but I thought it maybe would have felt different this year, seeing that we've just had a global pandemic. No. Oh, no. The boys are still in teeny-weeny shorts, bench pressing whatever in the garden. The girls are still in day-glow bikinis and heels. There's hair extensions. There's snogs in the shower. It is like a time capsule. It's nuts.
I did think from the pictures, it looked like the girls might not all be quite as thin as in previous seasons. They all looked very slim, but in the pictures that they released ahead of the start, some of them looked a little bit more like a size 10 or a size 12, with maybe one or two exceptions. Everyone's always been a size 6 or 8, and it's been very much one body type, hasn't it, in swimwear.
Mm.
So I thought that looked like it might be quite refreshing to see a few different representations. Is that the case?
Yeah, I think that's true, but I mean, they're still very slim and have gym bodies. But then it's been locked down, so if you knew you were going on Love Island, you probably would be doing quite a lot of living room sit-ups. The biggest development to come out of it is the underboob phenomena.
Fantastic. Is this in bikinis, I'm guessing?
This is in bikinis. So on first look, you might think, oh no, those poor women have packed their bikini tops and they've shrunk on the plane over to Mallorca.
Maybe they went to accessorise at the airport. And they bought the size they think they are in accessorized, but it's really unpredictable.
We've all been there.
The bikini bottoms I've bought in there, just, it's not good, sorry. Do carry on.
It turns out it's intentional.
Right.
Bye-bye cleavage. It's all about revealing the under portion of tit.
I think I could store things under my boobs now if I did an under boob. I'm going to try with this pen. Bear with.
Charlie's just tucking a pen under her boobs.
Yeah, he's solid as a rock.
Oh yeah, there we go.
Look. Which probably means, do you think that's a good marker of whether or not you should do the underboob trend?
Potentially.
If you can hold a pen just with your boob, perhaps.
Yes.
Fantastic.
I mean, I don't know whether this trend is going to be explored on the UK coasts, as we are all staycationing this summer. Perhaps Holcombe Beach will be inundated with an influx of underboob as soon as the sun hits. Who knows? But yeah, interesting. You can be whatever age you want and do some underboob, but oh, I don't think it's for me.
Okay, well, if anybody's on a Pembrokeshire beach in September, keep an eye out for Frankie. The social phenomenon I'm enjoying this week is Jack Grealish's curtains. I'm not engaged with the football. I was glad to not be in London and living quite near Arsenal Stadium when the football happened, because even if things aren't on at Arsenal, Arsenal supporters just seem to still congregate at the stadium to celebrate things. However, England won the football. Jack Grealish has 90s curtains.
Yes, he does.
Oh, it was giving me full Nick Carter.
God, yeah.
Michael Owen. Do you remember when Michael Owen was the dreamboat? I think I was about 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Again, I wasn't into football then, but he looked about 11, so that's why.
Yeah,
you could fancy Michael Owen.
Very boy band.
I saw a couple of teenagers with curtains as I was driving through Norfolk the other day, and what I'm enjoying is the return of, I would say, 2001.
Yes.
Paris Hilton and Nicky Hilton are suddenly the hot socialites again, and are at every event.
Benifer's back.
Benifer's back, J-Lo. We've got hipster jeans back.
Oh, I know, that's terrifying.
You'll never catch me in those, the really low slung ones as well. People are trying to bring back visible thongs.
Oh my God, the whale tail.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh no.
And Rihanna, now on two different Vogue covers, has done a really skinny pencil brow.
Sperm eyebrow.
I mean, Rihanna makes it look good, but if she influences normal people like us to do, we know how that ends.
Oh my God, funny. Yeah, apparently sales of hair product at John Lewis have absolutely shot up following Jack Grealish's, he might just be sweaty from playing football, but the pictures make it look like it's a wet look curtain. And I'm just remembering boys in their teens, when I was in my teens, getting that VO5 wet look gel.
Fantastic.
Oh, and it was just so gloopy and sticky.
If you ever touched it, felt awful.
Oh.
So the heartthrob was never what you imagined, though, when you got closer and you smelt Davidoff Cool Blue.
Saying that, though, I was positively drenched in Thierry Mugler Angel.
Yeah.
With some sort of gloopy lip gloss on.
Fantastic times.
Yeah, very thrilling.
Oh, and my other retro throwback that I want to talk about, because I know lots of people do use Pinterest, but Gina Colodangelo, who is the other half of the affair with Matt Hancock, ex-health secretary, and those pictures. So somebody has tracked down her Pinterest page and there are some quotes on it. She's pinned, "The longer the wait, the sweeter the kiss."
Aww.
Basically, people are really reading into things that she's got on there. But she's really into an inspirational quote, apparently. Or she was at some point. And I love that for her. If you ever pin an inspirational quote on a Pinterest board, you'll be shamed as chuggy for the world to see. Can you imagine?
That's actually a very valid point, because we're all sort of aware of our social media footprint. And for example, I've deleted my Facebook page. Not that I think anything particularly dodgy was on there, but there were some cringe pictures of me, you know, in my early 20s.
Probably taken by me.
You getting pissed as one of me in a shopping trolley. You know, you need to be aware of what people can search and what is out there online. But I never thought about Pinterest. It's so innocent. But then next thing you know, you're shagging the health secretary and your inspirational quotes from 20 years ago are coming back to bite you in the arse.
I think you'll find they're in love, Francesca.
Fine. I'm sure it's a deep, meaningful relationship.
My colleague Hannah Rogers wrote a piece about Martha Hancock. Her first outfit leaving the house, she was just walking the dog and she was wearing this fabulous green top with like a little fluted sleeve, and her hair looked phenomenal and I enjoyed it so much.
Talking about retro throwbacks, Chaz, this is all making me feel a little bit old, and I was reading a piece on Fast Company, why not, about younger millennials, which I think we just about fall into that camp, considering middle age to be between 35 and 50. Isn't that shocking? And our parents' generation didn't consider middle age to start until 45. So we've brought it a whole 10 years forward.
Crikey.
Which means middle age is just around the corner for us. Don't like the sound of that at all. Apparently, it's not that our generation thinks we're at the midpoint in our lives. It's just that we feel like we're in the middle-aged mindset. The piece says, they no longer view themselves as the young, hip, trend-setting generation. They're not young and hip. They're in middle management. Oh no, Chaz.
No, I think there needs to be something in between. Because I agree that I don't feel young and hip, and I feel quite aged, actually.
It says the woman that's just plunged into the, I don't know what's the, in a itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow Hunza G bikini.
It's the North Sea. I don't feel like we're old and middle-aged and in middle management, because I mean that implies that we're making some money, no, and that people listen to what we say, which doesn't sound right. But I don't feel young either, because I didn't greet the grand reopening of socializing and everything with "I can't wait to go to a club," or lots of people on my Instagram who are only a few years older than me were going to bottomless brunches. I didn't want to go to a bottomless brunch, did you?
No.
And I think that might be a division. We went for a lovely Razzie lunch with our friends, and I did have maybe 3 dry vodka martinis, but I certainly wasn't drinking bottomless Prosecco for 4 hours. So I think that makes us, what could we call it though?
It's like the precursor.
Yeah. it's like having quarter life crisis, but you're supposed to have that at like 25. So we're not quarter.
A third of the way through?
Yeah. I mean, it's not very catchy, is it? We're going to need to work on it. As a concept, I don't think anyone's going to be giving us any Pulitzers for this breaking news. But we're thinking about it, guys. We're thinking about it. We're just cooking it up here.
The pre-mids. Pre-mids?
Pre-middle. How about mini-middy?
Oh my God, mini-mids. Yeah, I like that.
Sounded a bit like a mini-milk.
Mm, yummy.
Yeah, delicious. Which also is generational because I feel like the younger children don't know about mini-milks as well. I read on the Financial Times a piece by Joe Ellison that is called Can Career Envy Be a Good Thing? And this is a topic we often talk about, even just between the two of us. And Joe Ellison talks about seeing a peer of hers announce on social media that, and I quote, in addition to her day job, she has released a topical non-fiction book and will shortly be taking on another high-profile role. But scrolling through the screed of congratulations that follows, my own felicitations seem to curdle in my throat. How is it that this younger, sunnier, stupidly accomplished woman is propelling such a turbocharged existence? And while I should be congratulating her for marking off another major career milestone, I sense a miasma of bitterness descending and the green-eyed monster beginning to move in.
Mm.
This is something I feel all the time, and I think it's potentially easier with close friends because you see the struggle as well. You see the hardship. And with every success that you have, I know exactly how hard you've worked for it. I know the hoops you've had to jump through, the lengths you've gone to. But I think social media, and she's saying she sees this on social media, I don't know who the peer is, but social media, you do often only see the end result. You don't see the years of work or whatever's gone into something. But I wondered, because I certainly feel career envy all the time, I wondered how you were feeling and whether or not being a mum has changed that, in terms of that it's put it into perspective and you're like, oh, I just need to focus on myself and not the people, or whether it's made it harder because you can't concentrate as much of your time on that as you did before.
I think I thought when I had a kid, all of that sort of stuff would go away and it wouldn't matter anymore, because here was a child that would put all of my insecurities into perspective. Yeah, I guess I thought my priorities would have shifted. And obviously they have, of course they have. I mean, Alfie is top of the list. But it doesn't mean that I have shut off the ambitious side of myself. That hasn't gone away. I mean, it probably went away for about 2 months just after he was first born. And I really couldn't think of anything else but keeping him alive. But it's come back hugely. And I think the thing that I'm finding difficult is that I am looking at all of these people's success. And I mean, the high achievers I follow on Instagram, Jesus, I don't know why I do it to myself. I feel like daily I scroll through and someone's launched a brand, someone's got a book, someone's written an amazing front page story, someone's interviewed someone incredible. And that still gets to me, but I know that I can't do that right now. I mean, I could have, maybe I didn't sleep. And I know there are women on maternity leave that manage to accomplish amazing things. I don't find that particularly helpful when people tell me that they've launched something incredible during their maternity leave, because I'm spending my maternity leave at toddler groups and working out how to get 6 stains out of the carpet. So anyway, I think I just find it frustrating, but I am having to get my head around the fact that I can't pursue my ambitions wholeheartedly like I used to. And whilst the reason why I can't do that is such a happy, brilliant reason, because I have my son, it's also a bit sad because I'm never going to be in the position where I can just put my career and my career success above everything else. I was having a coffee with a work contact yesterday, and she, very excitingly, is being posted to New York for 3 years with her company. I don't want to relocate to New York, but in that moment that she told me, suddenly I did want to go to New York, or I wanted to just go somewhere. I wanted to be relocated and have an exciting year, 2 years in another country and experience that. And then I thought, oh no, I can't. It definitely still hits hard. You sort of think, oh God, have I for now waved goodbye to being able to achieve what I want to, or what I fantasized about achieving in a sort of work sense. There's a new term that has been doing the rounds called success bombing, which I thought was quite brilliant. And that's, to me, what my Instagram feed is. You just get bombed with other people's success. And it's like, they've done this, they've done this, they've done this. And you do kind of feel a bit under attack because you're like, oh my God, everyone's achieving and I'm not, and help. But I know it's also such a perspective thing, because I'm sure people look at what I put out on Instagram and think, oh, fuck's sake, she's doing X, Y, and Z, and I've only managed to pay my nails. No?
No, don't worry.
Lol. How do you feel about it all?
I don't know. Ellison talks about whether or not it can be a good fuel to drive you on to achieve the things you actually want to achieve yourself. But I don't know whether it does that for me. I certainly think I should be doing this, I should be doing this, but I don't know that I actually do anything differently in response to feeling envy. She also looks at a couple who are both writers, and he became incredibly successful, and that his partner articulated it and they remain together. So she says, which suggests that the articulation of one's envy, while humiliating, does at least allow you to move forward rather than pickling in your own toxic bile. And I think that's probably what I do, because I have a tendency to just say to colleagues and peers, oh my God, I'm so jealous, or oh my God, I'm so impressed that you've done that. That's so impressive. You must be so proud of that. So I think I do try not to pickle, and I do just say, wow, that's amazing, and I'm envious. But I don't know that it helps me. It's difficult because I'm definitely guilty of success bombing too. My Instagram is mostly pictures of articles I've written, because Instagram has become a work thing as much as a social thing, and actually I wouldn't be engaging with it as much if it didn't feel important to my career, because actually you find a community there and you find people that engage with your stories and also give you feedback, which is lovely and really valuable. Because when you're writing and you're just in a vacuum, and I live by myself and I just have an idea and I write it, if I don't get feedback, if nobody comments and says this resonated with me or sends me a DM, then it just feels like I'm writing something and then just throwing it into the void and never knowing if it meant anything to anyone, if it was any good. So I'm definitely guilty of just sharing work and sharing things that I've done that I'm proud of. And I do look at other people's Instagrams and then think, oh God, they did that and they're writing for that person now.
Mm. But then I think Instagram, it's not just a place where we share inspirational pictures anymore. It's how we build our brands. Quite literally, you can build a brand off it. It's a sales mechanism. It's a marketing tool. But also for the individual, especially as writers, it's how you get commissioned. It's how you tell the industry, your peers, commissioning editors, that you're doing stuff and around. So it's integrated hugely into our working lives. I think the envy thing is so interesting when you're speaking about women. And I don't know if it's the same for guys, and if they see their peers smashing it at work and whether they get a sense of envy. But I think for women, we are so schooled to be envious of each other from the get-go. And a lot of it stems from there not being many opportunities for women, or historically there not being as many opportunities for women. And so you feel like if another woman has achieved something, it almost lessens your chances of achieving it.
There's not enough to go round.
Right, exactly. So you think, oh no, they've got the book deal, which means there's less chance that I'm going to get that. You almost feel like they've taken something away from you. Not that it was ever yours to begin with, but I think that can then stop you feeling just chuffed for your fellow females and feel a little bit like, oh no, your success is potentially going to hold me back, which is a really dangerous way to feel, because we do need to be championing each other. We do need to be highlighting each other and lifting each other up. But I think it's really hard to fight against that ingrained feeling that someone else's success is going to hinder yours.
Well, and historically, there hasn't been enough to go round for women. For example, on publishers' lists, women were greatly outnumbered. I don't know what the stats are now, but you used to see lists and there would be one or two slots for women. And even looking at newspapers or looking at the media, they used to feel like there were one or two spaces for women. Looking at, I mean, neither of us presents, but TV presenters, and there were certain spaces for women. But once those were filled, there weren't more. The majority of things go to men. And so I can totally see how if a space is filled, you're not thinking, that's great, more women, more visibility, more women at the top. You're thinking, is it full now? I think that probably is a part of it for me too. And it's difficult because it's embarrassing to acknowledge. And also, it sounds so much cooler to just say, you know what, I don't worry about what anyone else is doing. I just focus on myself. And some people obviously do live like that. And it must be a really happy way to live. But it's really difficult. And I think actually the pandemic has made it harder because we're not seeing people in person so much. So you're not getting context around things. Whereas we used to bump into our peers all the time at events or dinners or whatever, and hear about, I think they're making redundancies at my company, or my commercial commissions have really dried up, because you know these people well enough that you're honest with each other and you have that give and take and you're talking about the industry and being honest about the struggles that we all face. But when you're not bumping into people, when all you're getting is their Instagram and you maybe don't know each other well enough to be talking behind the scenes of that, then it's easy to kind of imagine that nobody else is worried about anything and that everyone else is just having this glorious golden time.
Yeah, you don't get the full picture, which I think is really dangerous. There was something on Instagram, funny enough, I saw Jen Atkins, the founder of Way Haircare. She was talking about that term overnight success.
Yes.
And saying, look, it's so rare that an overnight success is an overnight success. It's just that we always cut to the shiny, glossy picture of when it's all gone right. But we've skipped out, as you say, the hoops you jump through, the sleepless nights, the moments of doubt. And that's because we communicate through Instagram and social media, which is just so limited. There isn't space to share all of the less glossy bits. It's almost like, you know, when they have that outfit montage on TV in rom-coms, when they go into the change room and try on lots of different bits. You almost need to see that bit. You need to see them screwing up the paper, throwing it in the bin, caught on the phone to their mum going, I just can't do it anymore. Eating cold baked beans out of a can because they're just completely lost the plot. You need to see that montage before you then get to the finished result.
Maybe at the bottom of a post on Instagram that says, here's my new book, there should be a little note of the time that they spent 3 months before I actually started writing and 460 hours just spent staring at the computer thinking, I can't do this, would be great to know about every article. And every time I post an article I've written, I should write, this was rejected by this many people, or this many editors said, really? Okay.
Exactly.
And then it went through this many edits, and also I made this many cups of tea and watched this many episodes of Antiques Road Trip.
And had X amount of procrastination wees, because I just didn't want to have to actually sit down and write.
Exactly.
Love a procrastination wee.
Fabulous. Okay, great. I'm glad we've come up with a plan at least, and just don't go on Twitter. I feel like when people have career envy, they all just go on Twitter and pile on each other.
Oh man, I haven't looked on Twitter for years and years and years. I just can't go on there. It's dead to me. It doesn't exist. Fine.
Sometimes I click on to see what's trending. I'm like, okay, this is a great way to just tap into the zeitgeist. But then what's trending is usually just bile and anger.
Although actually Ben showed me a brilliant meme yesterday, which was on Twitter. We've come full circle. It was a picture of Jack Grealish with his glossy curtains stood next to Gareth Southgate, England manager.
Famous for his waistcoats, Frankie.
Famous for his M&S waistcoat. It was split-screened next to a picture of, and I can't remember who the male actor that played the coach in Bend It Like Beckham was.
Oh.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers?
Yes!
Next to him, and Keira Knightley, who has exactly the same sweaty, glossy curtains as Jack Grealish.
Oh my God, she had the bounciest curtains in that film.
It is Bend It Like Beckham.
Fantastic.
The Euros 2021 is Bend It Like Beckham. Bloody great.
Oh.
I wonder if Jack Grealish's abs are as good as Knightley's.
I don't know. But see, there we're seeing the origin story. It's not an overnight success. A lot of work went in Keira Knightley's really put in the hours before she got that win.
Oh my God, and Jack Grealish is getting all the glory.
I know. Typical. That's the patriarchy for you.
Yeah.
Not enough spaces for Keira Knightley's to compete in the World Cup.
Right. Have you got any recommendations for me?
I need to check with you that I didn't recommend this last week. Did I recommend This Way Up last time with Aisling B?
No, but I really want to watch this.
It's written by Aisling B. And it also stars her. And Sharon Horgan plays her sister in it. And they are just comedy gold together. It's loosely the story of a woman who things haven't quite gone to plan in her life. And she's trying to pull them back together a little bit. I don't want to give anything away, but it's at the very beginning of the first episode. It starts with Sharon Horgan picking up Aisling B. She had a nervous breakdown and her sister's picking her up after she's had some time in a centre to help her recuperate. So that's where it starts, and then it's her rebuilding. And if that sounds stressful, it shouldn't, because yes, okay, it does deal with bigger issues, and I think that's really great, because I think a lot of us are starting to have those conversations about mental health and about feeling overwhelmed or anxiety that still isn't talked about enough. So I think that's really important that it is. And that's not a theme that won't resonate with people. I think a lot of people will find elements of themselves in this, but it's just so funny. Aisling B is just so funny and brilliant, and her little physical mannerisms. The characters are so believable and so full that you don't for a second disbelieve that they're sisters or that they love each other and have this amazing relationship. It's just wonderful. And the whole series one is on Channel 4 at the moment. So you can watch it on, is it called All 4 or More 4?
One of those.
On the fours. The one that the logos are for. You can watch all of the episodes there. And series two is coming on July the 14th. The first episode is going to be on Channel 4 at 10 p.m. And then after that, the whole series is going to be available. So from 10 p.m, I guess, on the 14th of July. And the trailer is out for the second series. And it looks brilliant. So if anybody has not watched that, you are so lucky that you have six glorious episodes. It's just shy of half an hour each episode, which is also a real sweet spot for me. Because it's not like you're watching a whole film with each one. I mean, try and save them for one a night if you can, but I didn't, obviously. What would you like to recommend, Frankie?
So I would like to recommend the Book Bar's summer series. So Book Bar, you've probably heard us talk about it before. It's our new favourite bookshop. Sorry, I'm speaking for you as well, Chaz. But I feel like you share the same enthusiasm for this bookshop. It's on Blackstock Road in the northeast of London. It is chic as. It's run by Chrissy. Hi! Not sure if she listens, but hi if she does. So it's running its first IRL event series. It's got a space downstairs that it's holding talks and book clubs, etc. And it's running summer series, which starts on the 20th of July. It kicks off with Natasha Lunn.
Fabulous.
Who we know. Hi. Who is the author of Conversations in Love, an absolute smasher of a book. If you haven't, you absolutely must do. It's an evening where you're getting to hear about the book, her inspirations, etc., etc. Also, Book Bar serves really great wine, so you know there's going to be some good refreshments there. But there's four events in total. There's also one with Megan Noland, who has written Acts of Desperation. There's one with Savrat Hassan, who has written The Giant Dark, and Francesca Rees, who's written Voyeur. So it's all sort of about love, obsession, lust, etc. And they're each spread over July and August. There are still tickets available, though they are selling fast. But if you miss out on an IRL ticket, they're streaming it online. So you can also join online from the comfort of your own home with your own wine, which is also lovely.
How much money are we talking? Did you already tell me this?
I haven't told you how much money it's going to be.
Let's get to the numbers.
£25 a ticket.
Glorious.
Yeah, which for a good night out with a stimulating conversation and some nice rosé, I'm down with that. A reason to put some earrings on and dust your handbag out.
Do you think they're going to do a wine pairing to match each book?
Oh, that would be fun, wouldn't it?
So they're going to say, Conversations on Love is like it's a Shiraz Mourvèdre.
If they haven't already, they should. We should suggest that.
Or maybe we should suggest wine pairings and maybe cheese. I feel like cheese and books are very linked. enjoy for me.
Yes, I mean, I feel like cheese is linked with most things. Just to say, the ticket price also includes a copy of the book. So you get the book and the evening as well. So like a nice little fun package. Lovely. Ben just walked in with a cup of tea, which is my cue to leave because I have actually got to go to work now. And the road sweepers have started. Oh, and I haven't made Alfie's baby bear porridge. Disaster.
Well, get on with it. It's your turn to outro.
Man, I also need to put some eyebrows on. Thank you all so much for listening. If you like what you hear, please do feel free to rate, review, subscribe, and do tell your friends. Personal recommendations are worth their weight in gold.
You can also find us in written form. We publish the Wing Woman newsletter every other Sunday. You can sign up at thewingwoman.co.uk.
And you can drop us a line on the email, which is thewingwomanofficial@gmail.com.
Fantastic.
Great. And you can also witness our success bombing on Instagram at Charlie Gowans, at Frankie Gradden, and collectively at thewingwoman_.
We'll see you in a fortnight.
Until then, have a lovely week, or 2 weeks.
Bye.